You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. The Human Genome Project released the first full sequence of a complete human gene 20 years ago. And along with the project came the potential for a new kind of medical treatment called personal medicine or precision medicine. The hope was that we could have unique treatments tailored to our genetic profiles. That hope came with a lot of hype. But our guest says, in reality, genetic differences have proven to be small factors in a lot of major illnesses, things like asthma or Parkinson's. And when personalized medicine has been effective, the cost for treatment can be ruinous for patients. But he says there's an even deeper problem. Funding has gone toward this kind of genetic medicine research and away from environmental causes of disease that could lead to more cost-effective prevention efforts. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you familiar with this idea of personalized or precision medicine? Have you or someone you know or loved one had one of these treatments? Was it effective? Was it expensive? Do you have questions about the hopes for this medicine and what we might have lost in pursuing it? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. James Tabry is a professor in the Department of Philosophy and member of the Center for Health Ethics, Arts, and Humanities at the University of Utah. His new book is called Tyranny of the Gene, Personalized Medicine and Its Threat to Public Health. Jim, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Good to be with you.
I laid out the basics of the initial hopes for personalized medicine or precision medicine. Can you talk a little more about what we meant by those phrases at the outset?
Yeah, you nailed it. You know, the personalized medicine motto is the right treatment for the right patient at the right time. And it's really intentionally designed to be a contrast with what's often chided as the traditional one-size-fits-all approach to medicine. And so the idea is, on traditional medicine, you know, if two patients have diabetes or if 1,000 patients have diabetes, they're all treated the same. But when we take the genomic differences between us into consideration, then that will no longer be the case. One patient with diabetes will get one treatment plan based on their particular genetic profile. Another patient will get a different one. And the promise there, that, you know, the vision was that personalization, that ability to get down to the precise causes of problems, was going to just sort of be a revolution across healthcare.
We'll get into some of the problems with the way that came out, but a really fundamental story in your book is your concern that this quest for these personalized medicines, these genomics-based medicines, took away from research into environmental health. Literally, at one point, basically two different pieces of research pitted against each other at the federal level. Can you talk about that aspect of the threat to public health that you see in personalized medicine?
Yeah, the thread that runs through the whole book is the story about two efforts that were undertaken at the U.S. National Institutes of Health. That's really the agency that's the crown jewel of biomedical research for the United States. And after the Human Genome Project wrapped up in 2003, there were two different efforts to try to launch a nationwide study of health in America. One of those was called the National Children's Study, and that was going to be an effort to recruit 100,000 children from across the United States. One of the first recruitment centers was actually going to be based, focused on Waukesha County in Wisconsin. It was very much going to be focused on the environmental contributions to health and illness, and basically tracking children from before they were born until they were adults, collecting all this information about the environmental exposures that they had, and then looking for how that contributed to who got sick and who didn't later in life. The other effort was, again, focused on collecting data from people all over the United States. That was going to be focused much more on genetic contributions to health and illness, getting blood, getting some basic measurements from folks at the beginning, and then just sort of looking to see who gets sick later in life and then hook up those genetic differences with the differences in health outcomes. And they were really in a kind of competition to see who was going to come to life. We can sort of dive into the details as much as you want later, but the long story short was in December 2014, the National Children's Study was ultimately terminated. And in January 2015, a month later, President Obama announced in his State of the Union address what was came to be called the All of Us Research Project, and that was that genomics effort. So the book sort of looks at what were the factors, the financial factors, the social factors, the scientific factors, the technological factors that inclined the National Institutes of Health to lean in the direction of this genomic study rather than the environmental one. And the argument of the book is that these are forces that are all across the United States. And so, in fact, we're seeing something, a pivot towards genetics and healthcare generally.
Talking to James Tabry about his new book, The Tyranny of the Gene, Personalized Medicine and Its Threat to Public Health. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Will joins us now in Oconomowoc. Will, hi.
Hey there. My dad had prostate cancer and it metastasized to his liver. When that happened, they started personalizing his treatment based on his genetics, and I don't know very much about it. I experienced it as he was experiencing it, and he in the end passed away. So I don't know if it helped him or if it just prolonged kind of a downward spiral. But I'm really interested in the topic. Thanks.
And Will, actually, before I let you go, first, I'm sorry for the loss of your dad. Do you know, do you have any sense of how much it cost along the way, or were those things covered?
Cost was immense. I'm from California, and the state picked up a large portion of the bill because he's an older man. He passed away at 79, and he was retired, and I'm sure that his bills were a lot.
Will, thanks a lot for the call. And Jim, I know you can relate. You start your book with the story of your own father in Personalized Medicine.
Yeah, thanks so much for that call, Will. I had the exact same thought, Rob. The introductory chapter is basically my experience with this, and it was very similar to what Will just said, which was I encountered it by way of my father's experience with cancer. He was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer in 2011. He was given a drug, one of the early drugs that were really hailed as kind of one of these breakthrough treatments in personalized medicine. It was a drug called Tarceva for patients with lung cancer. For every indication, he did live a longer life. The life expectancy for somebody with stage 4 lung cancer at that time was about 8 months. My father was on Tarceva. He lived for about 13 months. So, as Will said, it was a lot of money. It did not cure him. It probably kept him around for a little while longer. In the end, I wish he didn't have lung cancer. And the story about the prevention of lung cancer is not one about the genes in our bodies. It's about making the air that we breathe more lung friendly, whether that's with smoking cessation programs or radon remission programs or asbestos abatement programs. The real progress in the downward trend of lung cancer diagnoses over the last few decades has not been genomic medicine. It's about making the environments that we live in much, much healthier.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing your story at 800-642-1234. Jim, some conditions that I think we had hopes for early on in genomic research were very common and growing problems like asthma and Parkinson's disease. As researchers tried to find genetic ties to those particular widespread conditions, what did they find?
That the genetics were far more complicated than they anticipated. I think it's helpful to contrast it. There certainly are conditions which are largely genetic in nature. There's a number of rare disorders, thinking about things like cystic fibrosis, Huntington's disease, sickle cell, where the genetic cause of the problem, the basic mechanisms responsible for it, have long been known. Those have lent themselves to genetic interventions, and we can talk about that later. It creates different problems of economics, but at least the biological plausibility is there. When you shift to the conditions that are taking the largest toll on most people, you mentioned asthma, Parkinson's, diabetes, heart disease, a variety of cancers. Those things are, from a genetic perspective, enormously complicated. There's not just one or a handful of genes. In many cases, there's tens, dozens, hundreds, even thousands of regions in the genome that are implicated in those conditions, along with all sorts of environmental contributions. And so what happens with those far more complicated traits is it just becomes that much more difficult to get any sort of purchase that you could then use to develop some sort of personalized medicine. And in turn, the progress on those fronts has been far more limited than in contrast to things like cystic fibrosis and sickle cell disease.
So in the conclusion for your book, I think you're making the case pretty strongly that if we want to tackle something like asthma, probably funding gene research isn't going to help. What would you like to see targeted instead?
We're going to get the most bang for our buck out of making the environments that we live in safer. And that's both doing the research that identifies the things that are making us sick. It's also, you know, and that's kind of traditional environmental research. Think of sort of, you know, focus on toxins, air quality, which population of kids have access to what air. You know, there's all sorts of research about different communities getting exposed to different environmental toxins. And so that's a part of that as well. The other side of it, of course, there was also social behavioral research and research about intervention. So even though we know, you know, city like Salt Lake City, where I live, the air quality is often very, very bad. But there's a big jump from recognizing that bad air quality is associated with a spike in asthma admittances into the hospital and coming up with interventions that can then alter that problem. And so I think, you know, the focus has to be on making the environment safer and developing the resource so that we can navigate an environment that isn't always safe.
We're talking to Professor James Tabry from the University of Utah about his new book, Tyranny of the Gene, Personalized Medicine and Its Threat to Public Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest based on what you've heard so far? What do you think about the idea of healthcare shifting to look more at our genetic profiles, moving away from environmental factors? Would you like to reverse that, as our guest would? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to James Tabry from the University of Utah. His new book is called Tyranny of the Gene, Personalized Medicine and Its Threat to Public Health. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about the idea of personalized medicine, environmental public health efforts that may have been funded less because of the focus on genes. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Jim, you mentioned earlier there are success stories where, yes, we're able to develop medications that work for people with more easily identifiable genetic causes of their conditions. But the costs, you write about that. Not only are they expensive to begin with, unlike a lot of medications, they seem to go up over time.
That's exactly right, Rob. The sort of poster child of personalized medicine was a drug called Gleevec. And it became the poster child in part because it was so successful and it came out quite early. So this was a drug that was approved by the FDA in 2001. That's right when the Human Genome Project is wrapping up. And so folks looking for, you know, something to point to as an example of this personalized medicine working were naturally drawn to Gleevec. It was a treatment for a particular form of blood cancer, for chronic myelogenous leukemia. About 5,000 to 10,000 people in the United States are diagnosed with it a year. And prior to 2001, life expectancy was quite poor. The chances of living more than 5 years after that diagnosis was very low. Now, when patients are diagnosed with chronic myelogenous leukemia, they can live for 10 or more years easily. And it's in part because of drugs like Gleevec and a series of others that have come along after it that are very effective at treating this cancer. But it came at a cost, and really frightening ways. When the drug was first approved, it cost about $2,000 to $3,000 a month, and so we're talking about $25,000 to $30,000 a year. And what happened was, Novartis, the drug company that manufactured the drug, in the ensuing years, rather than having those costs come down as more and more patients were able to take it, and then in turn as more competitors came online to offer drugs that work similarly, the cost of it kept going up. And in fact, by the time that generics for Gleevec were finally available in 2016, the price of that drug had gone from about $20,000 to $30,000 a year to close to $150,000 a year. And there was this outcry from the chronic myelogenous leukemia patients and their families, as well as the researchers, saying that this is just unsustainable. And in fact, what we find is when you look across the board for these medications that are developed in this manner, they are oftentimes extremely expensive, sometimes in the millions of dollars, which creates all sort of access problems for the people who need it most.
Let's go back to our callers with Will in Madison. Will, hello.
Hi, hello. I have something that's concerning, connected to genetic research. Yes, I would like to participate in the genetic research of all of us knowing about it. However, I have not participated particularly in the genetic research because I have two parents who both had Alzheimer's and passed mm-hmm. with it. And my concern then is, what if that if I were to participate and that information were then exposed? Here is information potentially about me, and then it's made public. What does that do to my healthcare costs? What does that do to my insurance? Well, you know, this is very concerning. Once we get into genetics, if this may potentially be my future.
Well, thanks for the call. Jim, what do you think?
That's a great question, Will, and thanks for being willing to share it. I think the first thing to say is back in 2008, the federal government did pass something called the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. And so, at least legally in theory, you cannot be discriminated against based on that genetic information when it comes to things like employment, housing, and health insurance. Now, there's sort of mixed reviews out there about how successful this is at protecting the people that need to be protected. But at least, again, in theory, the thought was we don't want people to be discriminated against based on that information. I think, though, the point that Will raises is a really important one, particularly with regards to a terribly scary condition like Alzheimer's disease. You know, the vision at the end of the Human Genome Project was, we're going to find the genes for these traits. We're going to then know the cause of them. And then that's going to pave the way for all sorts of biomedical interventions to make these problems go away so that we don't have to face those scary realities that some patients may be facing. Alzheimer's disease is just a classic example of one where there are some genes that are known to increase the risk of having it. But treatments for it have largely been wanting. You know, there is no cure for Alzheimer's disease yet. And so we are at a really awkward place now with some of these traits where genetic sources of the problems have been found, but then interventions that are supposed to make them go away are not available. And that creates the kind of problem that Will was just describing, where you might find yourself in a situation where you're torn about whether or not to get this information, because it's not like getting it will necessarily pave the way to a solution. It's just sort of creates the opportunity for all sorts of anxiety about the fact that you could have this thing and not have an obvious route towards preventing it.
Thanks for the call, Will. Talking to James Tabry about his new book, Tyranny of the Gene, Personalized Medicine and Its Threat to Public Health. Let's go now to Tom in Milwaukee. Hello, Tom.
Hi. I'm wondering if one could extend the question of looking at environmental factors into aspects of political decisions, such as during the Trump administration, a lot of the Environmental Protection Agency's regulations were nullified, or protections for OSHA, for workers. These are political decisions. It's not necessarily a question of where to direct research so much as just maintaining the protections we should already have.
Tom, thanks for the call. Jim, you tackle that in the book. You point out, as Tom does, there's bipartisan disagreement over things like environmental protections and workplace safety. But this personalized medicine, people across the aisle seem to be able to work together on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm so glad that Tom raised that. You know, the subtitle of the book is Personalized Medicine, Its Threat to Public Health. I think that, you know, one of the points I want to make clear is I don't think there's anything necessarily intrinsic to this genomic medicine that threatens public health. Rather, the idea is that there are all these sort of forces at play that are blowing into the wind of the sails of personalized medicine, which simultaneously tend to work against focus on researching public health. And the political landscape that Tom brought up is a perfect example of that. When you look at focusing on the environment and environmental research generally, environmental health, the environmental contributions to health and illness, it is a very politicized phenomenon, right? I mean, you've got one political party where people that are trying to run for president are vowing to get rid of the Environmental Protection Agency. I mean, that's sort of how politicized it's become. And so it's a hot button issue. When you switch over to personalized medicine, genomic medicine, precision medicine, blue, red, you name it, across the political spectrum, political leaders love the idea of launching an initiative where they're promising to cure cancer or make kids with rare diseases live longer lives. It's one of those things that in our very polarized day and age is a place where Democrats and Republicans tend to unite. And so that's another one of these reasons that you can see all this attention and effort going into it, is because it's a spot where the political tension just isn't as fraught as it is on the environmental side.
Tom, thanks for that call. And Jim, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure, Rob. Thanks for having me.
That's James Tabry, professor in the Department of Philosophy and member of the Center for Health, Ethics, Arts, and Humanities at the University of Utah. Talk to him today about his new book. It's called Tyranny of the Gene, Personalized Medicine and Its Threat to Public Health. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.